Love this podcast? Consider supporting this show. You decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Visit the link in the episode description to support now.
Welcome to the Mixtape Lounge. Please welcome your host, Greg Howard Jr.
You can catch my next guest at the Hotel Ziggy in LA on July 12th and 14th for the California Dreams reunion concerts. He is a multi-hyphenate, a legend, a heartthrob. Please welcome the absolutely incredible Aaron Jackson to the Mixtape Lounge. Hello, sir.
Hey, hello, hello. Thanks for having me, man.
Thank you so much for being here. So tell me and the listeners, what can we expect from the California Dreams reunion concerts?
This is going to be epic. That's where I can start this. It's all of us back together after 30 years. I mean, it's amazing. It is July 12th through the 14th. We're doing this whole like weekend extravaganza with two concerts, a brunch, meet and greets, VIP, coming to our rehearsals, all kinds of just amazing stuff you can get on the CaliforniaDreamsBand.com website to be able to get all of your information about it. We're doing two full sets of concerts. So it'll be, we got Brent, we got Jay, we got Michael, myself, Jenny, Kelly, and Diana coming back. Luckily, we don't have Heidi or William this time around, but maybe the future concerts will get them back.
So if I told you that I was writing a California Dreams reboot, would you be interested in producing it?
Would I be interested in producing it? I'd be a producer on it. Yeah, in a heartbeat. In a freaking heartbeat. Like, I mean, we'd have to call it like California Geriatrics Dreams or something. I'm not sure. You know, maybe I've got grandkids that are in a band and they want to get started. We joke about it as a cast. I think half of it's serious that we would love nothing more than to get back in the saddle and bring the dreams back to TV. I think it'd be an amazing, even just a real quick, you know, 13 episode kind of thing. Just where are they now kind of stories. You know, Mark went off to teach at Juilliard and Jay Anthony's like rock and roll. And, you know, Jake is like on tour around the world and the biggest pop star ever, you know, rock and roll. So who knows? But yeah, if you write it, dude, I'm down. You let me know.
Hell yeah. Which California Dream song do you think Taylor Swift should cover on her next album?
Take It Higher. 100% Take It Higher. I think that's one of the best songs we ever did. I'm a bit biased because it was one that I did on the show so often, but I would say Take It Higher is one of the more upbeat, funky type things that I think that she'd get into. That's a great question. No one's ever asked me that one.
So was a career in Hollywood like always the plan for you?
You know, I wrote a Funny story. I wrote a book, but I didn't ever finish the book. I started a book, and it was called From Dream to California Dream. And I was writing it on speak text on my iPhone, and I thought it would save in the cloud. And I did it on a flight to Israel. Like, and I just rambled, you know, but I told all the stories on how I got there and why I moved to LA and all that stuff. But to answer the question, I think it was always the dream to be, I don't know about a famous actor. I don't know that was really ever in my wheelhouse as much as I just wanted to act. I always tell my students that it's acting is legalized schizophrenia without the medicine. You know, you don't have to take medicine to be an actor. You're just crazy. And I was able to play all these characters, and maybe I was self-conscious of who I was. So I was able to get lost into somebody else's world and make them real, you know, so real life, imaginary, you know, imaginary friend kind of thing. But you know, when I was a kid, I all I did was act. From the time I was five and until, you know, now, I mean, that's all I know. I knew nothing else. So I think the plan was to always act. I don't know that I'd ever thought that I'd become famous because of it. And I don't know that I ever really was famous per se. I think we got lucky on a good vehicle. And, you know, we've all rode the California Dreams wave, for a lot of years, you know, we really have. So, yeah, so I don't know if that answered the question, or if I spawned off into other tangents on that, but I you know, yeah, I think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're now this like prolific multi-hyphenate. You do all these things. What's been the career highlight for you?
My career highlight has been a dad. That is truly my career highlight. My dad, when I was on every film, every television show, every play that I ever did on the professional realm, my father used to buy me a Zippo. And I have a ridiculous collection of Zippos, that and Converse, which is a whole nother conversation. But and on every lighter, he would put the character name and then either the name of the play or the film or the TV show. And then for every season of Dreams, I'd get a new one every season that would just say, you know, Mark. And then I think my last one was, I'm Glad I Was There, was the last one he got me for Dreams. And then he got me one when I got hired on the show, you know, Mark makes it, or Aaron makes it to the Peacock, or something along those lines. So I have this ridiculous collection of Zippos for all the characters that I've played. And then when I turned 50, my dad got me one that said the best character I ever played, and it just had the word son on it. And when my oldest daughter was born, he got me one that said dad on it. So I think my biggest highlight of that was to be a dad. Beyond that, within the industry or within my life, you know, taking away my children, I would say probably being a school teacher has been one of the biggest highlights of my life. I teach high school drama at a small school here in South Florida, and I absolutely love it. It's I got to teach my daughters, you know, they were in my class, and my fiance's children were in my class, and so that's been a huge highlight. You know, yeah, it's probably the best. Producing and directing is a lot of fun, but I think the most rewarding, I think, has probably been the teaching aspect of what I've done.
That's really cool. I love that Zippo story. That's beautiful stuff. That would be fantastic in a book.
You know, my thing is I can talk really, really well when I'm not like, thinking, you know, it's one of those things. But the writing aspect of it, like I need someone to ask me questions, and then I need like a ghostwriter to write my story, because I actually have a pretty, I think anyway, maybe, you know, I think I have a pretty awesome journey story of you know, my whole life. I mean, the things that I've seen and the things that I've done and the mountains that I have climbed and the mountains that I've moved to do what it is that I've done. And then to raise, you know, to raise children and to be a school teacher and to, you know, to deal with parents breaking up when you're very, very young and dad getting custody of the kids. I don't even know that it was custody as much as my mom left and my mom didn't fight for us. So my dad raised, you know, three children and gave up his, my dad was a radio jock for a lot of years on radio stations around the country, and worked with Jimmy Savile over in England, and worked on the WSM for the Grand Ole Opry. And then we had a radio station in my hometown. And my dad gave that all up to raise three kids, you know, from being the sex symbol, as my dad called himself, self-proclaimed, of course. But he gave that all up, like to be a homeroom mother and a Boy Scout leader and a soccer coach and a chauffeur and a nanny and a chef and a maid, you know. So that was, when I was a kid, you know, that was kind of what I was raised with. And then from, you know, packing up my Eagle Talon TSI Turbo and moving to Los Angeles, California, you know, on a whim, like it was just like, hey, I'm going to move to LA today. So I did, you know, and 11 days later, I got on a television series. Like it doesn't happen. I mean, it was truly dream, you know, from a dream to a California dream. And then, you know, being in a huge film at 15 called Lorenzo's Oil with, you know, two people that I had no idea who the hell Nick Nolte and Susan Sarandon were at the time. I was 15, but, you know, to work with them and to fly to England for the royal premiere and meet the late Princess Diana and the current King Charles. Like I met them, I hung out with them. Like who does that stuff? You know, like I did. Like, yeah, that was me. I did that, you know, and then to ride motorcycles and to ride my bike across the country. You know, I rode my Harley from Pittsburgh to Los Angeles. Like, who does that shit stuff? I'm sorry, I cussed. Beep that out. Don't cuss, kids. Like, who does that? Like, and I did. Like, I've had so many blessings in my life. I think a lot of people say that it's luck and all of that too, but I think I made some of my own luck, if that makes sense. Like I think you put it into fruition, you put it out in the atmosphere, and then if you say it out loud enough times, maybe it comes true. And I think that's what I did, you know. And I got two sisters that you know went on to be amazing women that they are, and they kind of, you know, raised me to be the lover, and my dad raised me to be a fighter. And so I had the best of all worlds growing up. So
what's the best career advice you've ever been given?
Don't give up. No is an unacceptable answer. My dad is, if I talk about my dad too much, I'll start crying. My dad turns 80 next week. Like he's the most amazing man in the world. Like he's one of these ones that if you have a problem, he doesn't always have the solution, because that's not his job. His job is, you know, as a parent, was to help me find the answer, but not give me the answer. So it was that no is an unacceptable answer. Like any unasked question, the answer is always going to be no. So I think that was probably the best advice. And my oldest daughter's getting married this Saturday. And, I'm taking her to our final daddy and daughter night before she becomes, a bride. And like, I've been writing down bullet points of things that I want her to know before she becomes, you know, a married woman. And that is the one of the pieces I'm going to pass on to her, that no is an unacceptable answer. And if you want it bad enough, go after it, believe in it, fight for it.
Which Disney princess do you most relate to?
Moana.
Nice.
Dude, these questions are fantastic. yeah, Moana. That or Belle, you know, because Belle cared so much about her dad, and she sacrificed everything for her dad, and then found love in it all, you know. I'd lay my life on a sword for my dad. I would not think twice. Like there'd be mine or his, me all day long. Take me, not him. And he's 80. Take me. I don't care. Yeah. Who do you recognize with as a princess? I'm curious.
Princess Leia.
Oh, I forgot about her. She's pretty awesome, dude. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever bought on Amazon?
Weirdest thing I've ever bought on Amazon. Oh God. Well, I bought a cat purse one time. I mean, I needed it for a show. I don't really, I'm not a weird purchaser. Like so I don't know if there's anything too crazy. I needed, I bought a switchblade one time on Amazon. Yeah. And I was getting it delivered, to my school because I needed it for a play. And, the guy that was like from Amazon, they called me and they said that you do realize this is a real switchblade. You know, it's not a fake one. And I said, yeah, I'm aware of that. It's like, well, it's going to a school. And I said, I know, I'm going to teach my students how to use it. The guy thought I was a nutball, but we were doing 12 Angry Jurors or 12 Angry Men. And I needed a switchblade for it. So that was a pretty weird purchase. Yeah, it was pretty awkward. I got a great TSA story if you want to hear that one.
Absolutely.
Oh, this is fantastic. I won't name the airport because I don't want to get anyone in trouble. However, I have a concealed weapons permit, right? So I can carry my handgun in the state of Florida anywhere except in schools or in a courthouse. And so I teach acting classes. I have a little studio here in Florida, and I do a lot of audition tapes for college and a lot of audition tapes for film and TV. So there was a scene that a gal was doing one time that she had to have a gun in the scene. So I had a little 38 and a little hand, pocket gun, literally fits in the palm of my hand. And so she comes in and she films, her scene. Obviously there's no bullets in it. The chamber's completely empty. There's the clip is empty as well. And she shoots the scene. And then I put it up on the, like kind of on the counter. And then we finished the rest of the class. And then I had a follow-up class like right after her was with a young, I think the girl was like 9 or 10. So I had my gun sitting out. So I just put my gun into my backpack and I just put it in the front pouch of my backpack. Again, no bullets in there. And the next day I was traveling. So I load up my backpack, my computer, my iPad, the typical stuff you take in your backpack. And I get to my local airport here and I go through TSA and my fiance and I land in LaGuardia and we go into the city and we check into our hotel and I start to unpack my backpack because that's what you have to do when you check into a hotel. And I unpack it and I put my hand inside the front pouch of my backpack and sure as heck fire, I pull out a 38. Got that through TSA, right? Out of Florida. Into New York, which, as we all know, handguns are illegal in the city limits of New York. And my permit does not allow me to carry a gun in the city of, or in the state of New York. So I'm in New York and I call up one of my police officer buddies and I'm like, dude, what do I do? Like, I got a gun in New York. And he goes, oh, I'm not sure. He goes, let me call one of my friends that's the NYPD. And I'm like, hell no, you're not calling someone the NYPD. Next thing I know, SWAT's going to be at my hotel and they're going to beat down my door and you got a gun. So he ends up giving my number and I end up talking to a cop in New York and I asked him, I said, what do I do with it? And he goes, well, there's a couple of things you can do. One, you can bring it down to the precinct here and surrender it. And I'm like, oh, what's that really entail? And he goes, well, we're gonna ask you a lot of questions. And I'm like what? And he goes, why you have a gun in our city? And I'm like, am I gonna get in trouble? And he's like, no, but it's gonna take you 4 hours or so. Goes, because we have to run your prints, make sure that you're allowed to do it. I'm like, all right, cool. And I said, is there any other options? And he goes, yeah, you can throw it in the Hudson. And he wasn't kidding. So sure as heck fire, what did I do? I broke down my gun into as many small pieces as I could, and I threw it in different garbage cans throughout the city of New York. That's my TSA story. Have you ever smuggled a gun through TSA? I have. I didn't even smuggle. But the thing is, can you imagine? Like, you're at the airport, and they like, it's they see this, and like, you're done. Like, you're going to jail. Like, there's no like getting yourself out of that. Like, how do I explain that? Well, you see, I'm an actor, and what I was doing is I was coaching a class, and why do you have your gun? Well, I mean, see, yeah, it just doesn't work. They're not going to believe me. Yeah, that's my TSA story.
If you could start your career over,
from minute one when you decided to load up the car and move to LA on a whim, would you do anything differently?
Yeah, I would. I'd probably learn to breathe a little bit better and kind of take it all in. You know, it went so fast, man. Like, I can't believe 30 years later, you know, but it went like I loved every ounce of it. Like of course there were bad days, you know. Yeah. You awful days, you know, and breakups and shows being canceled and executive producers being mad at you and writers being, you know, all those things. But I don't know that I ever kind of just stopped and smelled the roses, you know? And now I do. At my age now, I do. And I never really understood. And again, everything circles back to my daddy. My dad doesn't speed and I don't speed. But I never knew why I didn't speed. And then I remember asking my dad, why do you always go so slow? He goes, just smelling the roses. Just taking time to smell the roses. And so I think I wish I would have done that a little bit more. And just kind of enjoyed life instead of the fast pace of what being on a television show and constantly, you know, trying to pick up an appearance here or trying to fly to this one or go to this premiere or do this or do that. Like I wish I would have just kind of just sat back and relaxed a little bit more with it.
Stick around for more of the Mixtape Lounge right after this.
From the minds that brought you the smash hit podcasts, Your Life the Mixtape, and Headliners comes Your Life the Mixtape Magazine, a free monthly digital magazine that focuses on music, culture, and social commentary on current news and events. Visit www.yourlifethemixtape.com to subscribe today.
Hello there, I want to take a moment to talk to you about Dear Dean magazine from Dear Dean Publishing, my favorite subscription-only monthly digital magazine. It's got subscriber-generated content about politics, pop culture, travel, family, pets, and poetry and wellness articles and features, contributor articles from nationally recognized journalists, writers, and artists, and provides opportunities for novice writers and authors and other contributors to share their voice, talents, and words. Did I mention that it's completely free? Dear Dean magazine provides free advert space for small creators, authors, and podcasters, fulfilling its vision that some art should always be free. It's owned and operated by Myron J. Clifton and is designed and distributed by Katya J. Lerner at Buzzword Consulting. Visit deardean.com/subscribe to get signed up.
Hey, Suge. I am the one and only Jennifer Bush Harris, known in other parts of the multiverse as What Jay Said. From the planet of TikTok comes What Jay Said, the podcast. Find me on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. I am a match struck, and fire is at work.
How do you maintain authenticity in the entertainment industry when it is very often superficial and image driven?
You know, for the longest time, I was like, and I'll use your words, the heartthrob. And I never saw that. Like, was I a good looking kid? Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I had to be. People said it, right? That's my school bell. School's out and I'm at school. Crazy. I'm working even though I'm on summer vacation and yet I'm still at my school. I never looked at myself as that. You know, my father was the self-proclaimed sex symbol, you know, and I had dimples and everyone always said that I was cute and I was good looking and all that, but I never really put much validity into that because looks are superficial. It's the outside is only as important as the person looking in the mirror. It's what's on the inside that really counts. And so my authenticity, it came from my dad reminding me where I came from, that I was just a boy that got damn lucky. You know, I lived in a small town in Pittsburgh or outside of Pittsburgh. And, you know, I was never allowed to be big on my britches. My sister, Laura, constantly reminds me that I was a brat growing up. And she constantly reminds me that I need to come home and see my dad and to come home and have Sarah's chocolate and to sit on the back porch and just tell stories and laugh. So I never really got wrapped up in a lot of the Hollywood mumbo jumbo stuff. Like I was never a big partier. You know, I'm 50, I turn 51 next week, and I've never, outside of drinking and smoking, I've never touched a drug, and I saw more drugs than I ever care to see. I've never drank and drove. I've pretty much lived, you know, a straight and narrow life. When it came to that side of it. So the superficial Hollywood stuff never really affected me. And the circles in which I ran in, it never did either, you know, and I ran with a lot of, you know, now has been washed up old celebrities that we all are now. But I ran with a lot of them and, you know, we were the good bunch. I don't know.
How does Aaron Jackson define success?
How do I define success? Your questions are, I can't tell you how many interviews I've done, and this is by far the best. I'm letting you know that. And I don't say that to everybody, I promise you. How do I define success? Success is not tangible, right? It's not something that you can hold. Because if it was, success would be my daughters and my soon to be stepchildren. That's success. I think success, if I had to define it, is on my deathbed, that I look back and that I did leave a mark. I changed lives. I put a smile on someone's face when they needed it. I put my hand out when someone needed a hand. I patted someone's back when they needed that. To me, that's success. Like being able to look back on your journey and know that you did everything under the sun that you possibly could to be a good person and be a good person for other people. You know, I have tattoos of a lot of them now, which is so crazy when you think about who Mark Winkle was. You know, he was the clean cut all American kid. And here's me. I had tattoos and I rode Harleys. It was crazy. But I have two tattoos on my wrists. One says my oldest daughter, Brianna, and my other wrist says my youngest daughter, Aaliyah. And my left hand has Brianna's name on it, and my right hand has Aaliyah's name on it. And every time I was doing something for somebody else, like my hand would go out and I would see my daughter's names. And I was, when they were young, I was always doing it in their honor, in their name. Cause I always wanted to be, you know, the best dad that I could. And I figured if I had a constant reminder that I was a dad, and that I am going to be the best dad that I can be. So constantly putting my hand out and seeing my daughter's names, was always doing it in kind of in their name. And I never wanted to misrepresent their names or them in any way, shape or form. So to me, I know, again, I'm a talker and I got, we went down a path. It's not even on the same path, but we're on the path and I brought us back to the path. But yeah, so to me, defining success is the end of my life when I meet my maker and he allows me in those pearly gates because I did something right.
Is there a secret as an actor to maintaining a healthy work-life balance?
Is there a honesty with your significant other? That I think I got married when I was very young to my first wife. In LA, I met her, you know, it was, you know, that love story, everything. And I think I worked so much during that, but she loved it. You know, she loved the premiere. She loved all that stuff. And then when the show got canceled, so did my marriage. And then I met my daughter's mother, and for the first five or six years, you know, I traveled a shed load. And when I mean a shed load, I was riding that dreams wave as much as I could. So if I could pick up an appearance and make a buck here, make a buck there, go here, do that, I did it. So I missed a lot of the beginning part of my children's life. And then, it's my oldest daughter, when she was seven, their mother and I separated. It was the 7 year itch. We separated, for like 6 months. And it was one of those, like a 2x4 hit me upside the back of my head. Like, no, this is, you're losing your marriage because you work too much. You're a workaholic and you don't do things like you're like, I would think like I would travel and I'd come back after a week and like, I would forget that life still happened when Aaron was gone. Cause I was a little bit self-consumed at that point a little bit, which I know sound kind of contradicts what I'm saying about, you know, putting my daughter's names on my hands and constantly doing the handout for people because of my daughters. But it took me to be hit by my ex-wife in that situation to make me grow up, I guess, and realize. Honesty, communication, and not letting your work define you. You define your work, but your work does not define you. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
That should be a book. We're writing a book together. You and I doing it. All the proceeds are going to go to the homeless and the Special Olympics. That's where all the money's going to.
I like it. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Robin Williams did that in every film he ever did. He always had the homeless. Yeah. I wish I could have done something like that when I was working. I did get a little girl on my show one time. Well, she got to fly out. She was the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Her name was Amy Tom. She had bone marrow cancer. And she wrote me a letter. And I ended up, you know, the Make-A-Wish was to meet me. And I ended up flying her out to L.A. like multiple times and meet the cast. And it was the highlight of that young lady's life. I don't know. It made me just think of that. It's crazy. The stuff you pull out of me, man. So real.
So removing the California Dreams catalog, mm-hmm. Is there a song that changed your life?
Every rose has its thorn. Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
My first tattoo was because of that. Yeah. I'm like such an 80s junkie when it comes to music. On my playlist or on my Pandora, all it is 80s. You know, it's Journey, it's Air Supply, it's Styx, it's REO Speedwagon, Meatloaf. Like that's so like I'm such like a hopeless romantic, you know, like I love every sappy song. I love a good tearjerker movie. You know, I'm the one that goes into the shower and cries, you know, I'm that guy. You know, I'm a John Hughes baby. Every good story has a happy ending. It has to.
It's interesting that you brought up John Hughes. What is the best John Hughes film?
I mean, there are so many. Like, I mean, I could go through the list of what he did, you know, from the Home Alones all the way to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. But like, I don't know that there's one that's the best. I love the Ferris Bueller story and how that all came to fruition, you know, being in the writer's strike and him having as little time as he had to write it. There's that bell again. But it's so I would say Ferris Bueller's Day Off, just because I loved the idea behind it. It really, really did. I mean, and it put, you know, so many people on the map, you know, thereafter. I mean, look what it did for Charlie Sheen. I mean, he's drinking tiger blood, isn't he? So, yeah. And like Charlie Sheen in that movie, he stayed up for 48 hours, like, so he can look like a drug addict. You didn't have to stay up, buddy. You just kind of look like one. I love you, Charlie. I love you to death. I really do. You know, our publicists were the same for a lot of years. Jeff Ballard, he passed away not too long ago. You know, so I kind of not ran in the circle with Charlie, but Charlie was, he was, you know, he's older than me, but, he was always around and I was always like, I'm not going to be that guy. I'm just definitely not going to be like you, you know, that's awful to say about another, a colleague. So I love you, Charlie, but I don't want to be you. He had a good thing, man. He crippled it. Like, seriously, like, who does that?
Yeah. On
how do you do that, bro? Just don't get it.
And it wasn't just him. The little boy on the show did the same thing.
Yeah. I always tell my kids, not my student kids. They're always like, well, you know, what do you like? What does it take to be an actor? And it's like, well, it takes, you know, 98% want, desire, and need with 2% talent. And I'm like, look, anybody can make it. Like, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to be great looking, you know. I mean, look at that kid on Two and a Half Men. I mean, that kid's hard on the eyes, you know, and that's what I used to say, because you're not allowed to say someone's ugly, because that's just mean. But you can tell it's hard on the eyes. They look good from afar, but far from good. I don't know. Like, and then John Cryer went on to be, you know, he had after that show. I mean, he just picked up his next. There's more bells in here than the law allows. Jesus Christ. But he went on to have huge success. I mean, that obviously Two and a Half Men was massive. And then now John's on that new show with Donald, the guy from Scrubs. Donald.
Yeah, Faison.
Yeah, Faison. Thank you. Look at you knowing it. You're on it. And that's funny is I almost worked with Donald like back in the day when Clueless came out. And they were, cause I auditioned for Clueless and Michael Caine and I did actually, both of us, and we got all the way down to the wire. And, Peter Engel would not allow us out of our contracts. Like, he would not let us film a movie over the summer cause we were locked in. So not saying that I would have been cast in it, but I got all the way down the wire to it. And then we found out we weren't allowed to do it even if we did. So that would have been a game changer. Clueless. Oof. It's like the most iconic film ever. I don't know when the last time you watched that is, but I watched it not too long ago.
I watched it, I think, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, dude, it's one of the best films ever made. It really is. Like, seriously, like, it's so epic. Like, it's just, you know, just a good film. So you figure I was in that. If I get that, I get the older brother. I'm Ant-Man. That's basically what it is. So, Paul, you're welcome. If you're listening, Paul, you're welcome. You have a career because of me. I'm sticking behind that. So, if you want to fight me, fight me.
That could be the title of your book, Paul, you're welcome.
Paul, you're welcome. There you go. My career sucks, but yours is great. Yeah. Who wants to read that book? I do.
I do.
Yeah. Well, that's right. Seriously, dudes, I got some great stories. I really do.
I'm down.
I can't even think of some of the crazy stuff that I've done, but I know I've done it. I know I have. I'm going to start writing them down. We're writing a book. We're doing it. Paul, you're welcome. That's the title. If not, there's a whole chapter in there just dedicated to Paul.
So what is next for Aaron Jackson?
My daughter's wedding this Saturday. Beyond that, I have a movie I want to make. It's about that little girl that I was talking about earlier on named Amy Tom. She passed away from bone marrow cancer. It's been 28 years now. When I met her, her doctor said that she at best has 6 months to live. And I met her my first season on the show, and she ended up living for like 5 more years. And her mother, Elaine, she accredited me on that I kept her alive, you know, that I was the hope behind it. And she used to, when she got diagnosed with bone marrow cancer, she explained to me that her entire life went black and white, like just everything just went black and white, until I came into her life. And then she started to see splattering of color. So I want to kind of tell the story, kind of like the Fault in Our Stars story. But I want to have the imagery when she gets diagnosed to go into black and white and show. I want to show emotion instead of tell emotion, because I think anybody can recite lines. I think that becomes, I'm not saying that that's not hard, but I think anybody can do that. But if you can show the imagery inside the mind's eye of what they're seeing, and I think maybe for a split second, we might be able to feel, and maybe people would make, you know, a difference and start looking at life slightly different if they can understand a little bit more about what someone's going through. So that's on my bucket list to do. But beyond that, what's next for me? I gotta prepare for next school year. I have the best theater program in the state of Florida. And that's not because I'm titling it that way. That's what they've told me. We keep winning all these awards. My room is like full of trophies as I look around it. So preparing for next year's show season, getting married next year. Don't know the date yet. We're waiting for my daughter to get married. She just graduated pharmacy school. She's a pharmacist. My other daughter is going to graduate next year, nurse anesthetist. And then our other daughter is going to graduate, with a psychology degree. So just, you know, living life and getting fatter and older and balder. That's about it.
So if the listeners on the show want to keep up with you, how can they find you?
You can go to the official Aaron Jackson on Instagram, or you can find me on Facebook, just under my name, Aaron Jackson. A lot of stuff that I post anymore is my wife, or soon to be wife, and I sitting out in our back patio drinking wine. That seems to be like my newest thing. That, or when we do a wine walk. I take pictures of food a lot. Like, I'm an old man now, you know? I'm diligent on my Facebook, and I'm pretty diligent on my Instagram. I think you had asked me earlier on if like what I could have done. I think if I could have, when I was on the show, I wish I would have understood the whole social media thing a little bit better. Cause that was just really the birth of the internet was when the show started. And, I was great with fan mail. You know, I answered every letter back, but I think it was one of those, I wish I would have gotten better technology wise, because I suck at some of that. Like, I have to ask my kids, I'm like, what is ChatSnap or SnatchChat or what is that? You know, and how do I make a reel? What is a reel? Because like a reel to me is reel to reel. I mean, that's an old radio, you know. I know how to make a reel. I know how to shoot something. I can make a damn good video, but I don't know how to make anything on Instagram. I'm pretty diligent about it. My daughter's helped me out an awful lot. I would like to get one of those little blue check marks next to my name. So please follow me, find me, do whatever it is. I don't know why I want that check mark. I just want to be able to say, I have a check mark. What do you have? Neener, neener, neener.
I think you can actually buy those now.
I don't want to buy it though. I'm cheap.
That's like, fair. No, that's completely fair.
Dude, I am so cheap that I'd skin a fart. I probably can't say that on radio, but I'm that cheap. Like, and maybe cheap's not the word. I think I'm frugal. Like, I research it. Like, I don't just buy it stuff on the whim. Like, I like to know what I'm buying. I don't like to waste money. And I'm like, I think that's a waste to buy a check mark. Can you just give it to me? Like, I mean, I met Princess Diana. I mean, don't I get something for that?
That's fair. I mean,
that should give me a check mark. I mean, damn it. I mean, Gary Busey, when they did the Gary Busey story, you know, on how his life was a train wreck, they used my motorcycle. I mean, that should give me something.
I mean, that's more than enough, I feel like.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, we should start a petition. Give Aaron Jackson a free check mark. I've even reached out to Instagram, but they're just like, yeah, you're not popular enough. I'm like, dude, you suck.
That's crazy.
I got 5,000 followers, man. Come on. So, yeah, no, they haven't given me one yet. Sooner or later, I'll get one. Sooner or later.
Thank you so much for taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk to me about you and talk to me about everything. I have enjoyed this so much.
Dude, it's been a pleasure. Like I said, this has been the best interview with the best questions. Let's do it again. Let's you and I do a podcast together and just talk real stuff, more stuff.
Absolutely. I'm down.
Let's do it. One that we can cuss on because I'm a cusser. I cuss a lot. It sounds awful. It's not like I'm a drug addict. Like, I'm not. I need it. I need to cuss. Not really something I need to do, but I just find myself.
The Mixtape Lounge is a Your Life. The Mixtape Media, LLC production in association with Rod Wharton Productions. All rights and trademarks reserved.